This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates and watch us on Free Speech TV Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. With the presidential race sucking up all the energy and attention this election, there's little discussion of the House and Senate races playing out across the country. Republicans have, of course, held control of both houses of Congress, making President Obama's ability to move legislation forward or even nominate a Supreme Court justice extremely difficult. Now, a dozen or so close Senate races may flip control of the Senate. House races are also in play, but Democrats may have an insurmountable task to take over that chamber. Joining me to try to figure it all out is David Dayan. He's a frequent guest here on Rising Up. He's a contributor to Salon and The Intercept and a weekly columnist for the Fiscal Times and the New Republic. And his latest book is called Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud. Welcome back to the program, David.
Thank you.
So first, let's talk about the Senate. I understand there are about 11 races that are in play, meaning close enough that they could flip between the incumbent to the other party. Is that what you basically can see?
Maybe not quite 11, but in that range, I think, the ones that are sort of off the table, it looks like Democrats will get a pickup in Illinois. Tammy Duckworth is running against Mark Kirk. He kind of torched himself at the end of this race with some comments about Tammy Duckworth's ethnicity. That's going to be a pickup for the Democrats. The race in Pennsylvania against incumbent Pat Toomey, Republican, looks like that's trending towards the Democrats with Kate McGinty. Russ Feingold, who's a former senator and progressive, is running against Ron Johnson, the incumbent in Wisconsin, and he's kind of holding on by his fingernails. That's going to be a very interesting race.
Yeah, and actually, let's talk about that for a minute. Russ Feingold, a very important progressive. He's running for the Senate again?
Yes, he's running for Senate again. He lost in 2010 to Johnson. That was an off-year election, no presidential race. The expectation was in a presidential race that Feingold would sort of cruise to victory, and it was looking that way. But a lot of money has been thrown against Feingold in the last month or so, particularly by the Koch brothers network. And Johnson has fought back to sort of within the margin of error. So it'll be an open question as to whether Feingold's going to be able to pull this out. And that's a very important race for Senate control. Just to get the contours here, Democrats need to pick up four seats in order to take back the Senate if Hillary Clinton wins. They would need five seats to take back the Senate in the event that Hillary does not win. Right now they have 46 seats, so getting to 50 would require four seats. And their targets...
Right, and so, if Hillary does win, then Tim Kaine, the vice president, would be the tiebreaker, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so the four targets are really Illinois, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Indiana, where Evan Bayh, the former senator, is running again. And that was another race that looked like that was going to be off the table, a win for the Democrats. But Todd Young, the Republican, has fought back to sort of a tie. So that's another toss-up kind of race. And then there are several other sort of toss-up races that could decide control in New Hampshire, where Kelly Ayotte is running against the governor there, Maggie Hassan, the Democrat. Missouri, where Senator Roy Blunt is running against the Secretary of State, Democrat Jason Kander. North Carolina, where the incumbent Richard Burr, Republican, is running against a former state senator, Deborah Ross, former head of the ACLU down there in North
Carolina.
And
in fact, in North Carolina, this is a state where there's been massive political upheaval this year. Does Governor Pat McCrory's position on the sort of very homophobic and anti-transgender bills that have been passed there, has that hurt the Republican?
It's going to be a factor. There's an actual gubernatorial race. So McCrory is on the ballot this year. So that's going to affect the down ballot race. And of course, you have a very close presidential race there as well. So a lot of money, a lot of interest in North Carolina, another toss-up race. And then Nevada, I'd say, was the other toss-up, where Harry Reid is retiring. So this would be a pickup for Republicans if they won this race, with Joe Heck, the congressman, going up against the former Attorney General Catherine Cortez Masto. You know, a lot of these races are really 50-50 shots right now. There doesn't seem to be a consistent swing to the Democrats or to the Republicans. Typically, in Senate races, all of the toss-ups go one way or the other. We're not seeing that right now. So this is really on the knife's edge as to who will gain the Senate. You could spin a scenario where Democrats only win one seat and have 47 seats, or you could spin a scenario where they sweep all of these races and get 53 seats, or even 54 if they get lucky in Florida. So that's where we're at.
I'm looking at some of the polls that are coming out. Real Clear Politics is aggregating the polls as they come out every day, and it looks like the Republicans, you know, in a lot of races, seem to just have a tiny edge. How much of a factor could these polls be off by if late-breaking sort of dismay or anger towards Trump might keep some Republicans away? Is that a possible factor?
I mean, this is the open question, whether we see swings to Trump or Clinton in the final days could also dictate whether we see swings to the Democrats or Republicans in these down-ballot Senate races. However, you know, in a lot of these states, we've already have the vote banked. You know, places like North Carolina, Nevada, there's substantial early vote already. So it's who has the lead right now is really the question you have to ask yourself, and whether that can be overcome. We know that there's a substantial lead for Democratic people with Democratic registrations in Nevada. And that is
and Latinos are surging for Clinton in Nevada, we hear.
That's correct. And African-American turnout in North Carolina has started to bounce back. So, you know, that is all a factor in this entire determination. You can't just say what's going to happen on Election Day and where's the swing going to be, because a lot of those votes have already been cast.
As of Friday, 35 million votes, 35 million plus votes have been cast. I want to go back to Nevada for a minute. Is it true that if Catherine Cortez Masto were to beat Joe Heck for Harry Reid's seat, she might become the first Latina ever in the U.S. Senate?
She would. Wow. She would be the first Latina ever. And
I had to go back and look that up because I couldn't believe it.
here in California, Loretta Sanchez, of course, would be the second Latina ever. She wins a Democrat versus Democrat race against Kamala Harris. Harris is strongly favored in that race, and she would be the first biracial woman in the U.S. Senate, and only the second or third, maybe I think the second African-American woman in the U.S. Senate. So, you know, we haven't had a lot of color in the Senate.
Yeah. And in fact, that California race is really interesting, with two women of color battling it out for a Senate seat. I mean, we've got a lot of sort of state legislature races where women of color have come forward. But in the U.S. Senate, you know, these 100 rarefied representatives, second only to who occupies the White House, has been mostly the purview of wealthy white males since the founding of this country. And it might be interesting to see whether Catherine Masto and Kamala Harris's presence there, if Masto wins, might have an impact on the way the Senate functions.
And gender in general. I mean, a lot of these Democratic races are, they have women who are running in these toss-up seats. Deborah Ross, Kate McGinty, Maggie Hassan, Catherine Cortez Masto. So you could see up to, I think, six in all, Tammy Duckworth as well, six in all, women, additional Democratic women coming into the Senate, making it a little more equitable. Right now, there are 20 women in the U.S. Senate. You could see, I think, as much as 26 by the end of the night.
Okay, so if the control of the Senate flips from Republican to Democrat, what would that mean for who occupies the White House? Say we have a Clinton White House and a Democratic Senate, but a Republican House. Does that give a Clinton, President Clinton, a little bit more leeway to get things done than Obama has had?
Well, I think the biggest impact would be on judicial appointments. It'd be on appointments in general, but particularly judicial appointments. You know, we have this vacant U.S. Supreme Court seat right now. If the Clinton and a Democratic majority in the Senate get in, you could assume that they will nuke the filibuster on Supreme Court appointments to allow those to get in by a simple majority. Already, we have courts appointments at the district and appellate court level needing only a simple majority, and appointments for executive branch agencies needing only a majority. I think the Supreme Court will go by the wayside and go along with that if we get that to that point, because already Republicans are saying that if they get back in power, they would leave that seat vacant for 4 years, that Supreme Court seat.
If they get power of the Senate again.
That's correct. They've as much as said that they're going to leave that vacant.
I mean, so much for protecting the Constitution.
Yeah, I mean, it really would cause a constitutional crisis if this idea that only conservative justices can go on to the Supreme Court, that really would you know, make us think about the structure of our government itself. So that I think is the sort of most vital way in which control of the Senate is a major factor. As far as legislation is concerned, you know, it's pretty unlikely at this point, especially with the swing in the final days back, you know, in Trump's direction, whether it's because of the FBI announcements or whatever, the tightening of the race has kind of made it such that control of the House is very likely to remain in Republican hands. You could see Democrats picking up anywhere from 5 to maybe even 20 seats in the House, but that's not going to be enough.
How many seats would they need to gain back control of the House? And I mean, I basically understand that that's
30.
So that's just not happening.
So that's not likely to happen. There was some sort of hopes that it would when Clinton looked to be ahead by double digits, but that is no longer a factor. And, you know, I see no reason why, even with a smaller majority, that Paul Ryan would acquiesce to any of Hillary Clinton's plans in domestic policy in particular, and even in foreign policy, really. So it's going to be difficult to get legislation through. And of course, when you're talking about legislation, the filibuster is still operative, and it does not seem like Democrats are willing to take that step and get rid of the filibuster on legislation. And why would they if they can't even get anything passed through the House? So.
Right.
It's the likelihood of more legislative gridlock is apparent. However, the Supreme Court, as a co-equal branch of government, is mightily important. You could see significant changes in sort of the direction of the country with a working center-left majority on the court. There's also plenty of things that Clinton can do in the executive agency realm. And if she's able through the Senate to get her appointees passed and into those executive branch agencies, then that's going to be easier to do as well. So control of the Senate really does dictate the effectiveness of what this next Clinton regime is, and whether or not we have some kind of constitutional crisis over the next president not being able to even get her government up and running.
Right. David, staying on the House for a minute, there are some congressional races that look interesting, not in as much as how they might change the overall political map, but just in terms of seeing some progressive, fresh progressive faces. Zephyr Teachout in New York's 19th congressional district is a big favorite of progressive progressive. She's gotten massive backing from Senator Bernie Sanders, and she's in a tight race with John Faso in that district there. How important is it for us to pay attention to these races as well, just in terms of having the kind of confidence that progressives really need to start running for Congress? I mean, you know, and I say progressives, not Democrats.
It's critically important. Yeah. The teach-out race in particular, she brings a completely different perspective on things like political corruption, on things like concentrated power from the corporate sector, economic power and political power. She would be a leading voice on those issues from the perch of Congress, and it shows that in a swing district, you can get someone with that kind of perspective elected. And it's really not necessarily a left-right thing. It's about who's in power and who's out of power in the way that our government is set up. And if teach-out can show a path by which you can talk about these issues and win, that will be a major spur in subsequent years for people who have the similar worldview and mindset to take control and try to get elected. I think that teach-out race is so important to the future of the progressive movement and the future of this country.
And Bernie Sanders has also thrown his weight behind a number of state legislative races, progressives running for state legislative positions, many of them people of color. It certainly would be interesting to go through all of them, but we don't have time. Staying on this idea of what the dynamic between the White House and the Senate could be starting January 1st, if we do have Trump sitting in the White House, what is the likelihood of there being Democratic control of the Senate and a Trump presidency? And if so, what could that look like?
It's possible. It's certainly not probable, because you would suspect if the race moves to Trump in the final stages, then that would be reflected in some of these down ballot Senate races. However, just because of the vagaries of the Electoral College, you could see Trump get elected even though Clinton wins the national popular vote. And if that is reflected down ballot as well, you could see that happen. And split tickets do still occur. So a Trump presidency with a Democratic Senate, the real question is how far would Democrats be willing to go to blockade Trump's attempts to make really big changes in legislation. I think the Affordable Care Act repeal would be very difficult to get past a Democratic Senate. Some of the immigration ideas that Trump has, and the question is how far away, you know, outside the lines of legislation would Trump go to implement his agenda? And you know, given that he doesn't really see constitutional norms in kind of the same way that the rest of us do, I think there would be a lot of end runs around Congress. You know, I mean, you could argue that through executive orders that this has become more pervasive over time, particularly in foreign policy, where presidents sort of use their own prerogative and don't inform Congress or don't take Congress's opinion into account. I think you will see that. Probably whoever wins, you will see more executive orders, more end runs around congressional authority, more breakdowns sort of in this checks and balances order. And it makes you wonder about the structure of our government itself and whether it makes sense to have this multiple veto points when you have an ideologically consistent set of parties, and whether it would be make more sense to have a parliamentary kind of structure where if you win the election, you get to implement your policies, and then you have actual accountability for those policies in the next election.
Right. Europe's looking quite tempting these days. David, we live in strange times indeed. I want to wish you good luck surviving the next week, and I'm going to try to do the same. Thanks so much.
Good luck to us all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. David Dayan is a frequent guest here on our program. He's a contributor to Salon and The Intercept and a weekly columnist for the Fiscal Times and the New Republic. And his new book is called Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud. You can actually watch that interview on our website if you search for it at risingupwithsonali.com. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can also find us on Twitter at twitter.com/RUWithSonali.